Welcome to the Kismet Collection, a series of conversations and guided practices meant to support you in your awakening. If you've landed on this episode, it's not coincidence. It's Kismet. My name is Riley Webster. I am your host, and let's begin. Hello, friends. Happy Friday. I'm so happy that you are here, that you are choosing to spend some of your time and space in this virtual space listening to this conversation I had with Janelle, who is a karmic astrologer. And I didn't know much about what karmic astrology was before this episode, and Janelle really lays it out for us. She also speaks to the energetics of 2020, which I think most of us can agree has been a bit of a flop of a year. And she's going to speak a little bit about kind of what's upcoming energetically. And just kind of where we're at right now astrologically, and some things that we can expect and how to move forward in a way that feels super supportive. So I'm excited to share this with you. About 25 minutes in, my dog Oakley makes a lovely little appearance. I chose not to edit this out because clearly he wanted to say hello. So I hope you enjoy that little interjection. I also wanted to drop a couple hints of a few offerings I have coming up. I'm not going to share too many details just because I am in the creative process currently, but I am going to have an exciting offer in September, and it's all about nurturing your inner creative and making space to slow down for the season ahead. And then in October, I have a collaborative project I'm launching with my friend Caitlin Armstrong, all about how to live in interconnectedness. So how to care for yourself and in turn care for the whole. So I'm really excited about those things that I have coming up. I'll be sharing more as soon as I can. I also have an offering that is available now on my website under shop, and it's called Your Inner Writer. So it's a 30-day journaling experience meant to help you tap into your inner writer and learn something about yourself on the way. It is $9.99, a 30-day booklet. I loved making it. I've had some really positive feedback, so I'm really excited to share that with you. I will link that below in the show notes. I hope that you enjoy this episode, that it gives you a little bit of support as we navigate this very interesting time on the planet. So without further ado, here is my interview with Janelle. I would just love for you to introduce yourself and introduce your work and kind of what led you on this path.
Totally. I will be super glad to share that. And I think that that's the best way. First of all, that's just the best way to approach anything, exactly how you just described it. Like, there's so much information out there. There's so many schools of study, so many available tools for human development. And it's just figuring out what's going to assist you the best for your own personal journey. And so for me, astrology has just landed so deeply. There are other incredible tools that I like to use. I'm like a studier of world religions and philosophy and all of that. And it's, I think that really developing that inner intuition is so helpful in figuring out, okay, what feels good for me, and what can I actually apply to my life? Because I think that's one of the important pieces too, that sometimes is missing in a lot of, in a lot of different, like development, or I don't know, I would say even within philosophy or in religion, spirituality, is how do we make it applicable and practical to, and practical for our lives? So that we can actually implement it.
Yeah. And there's this idea, I think sometimes it's easy to get caught up in like always looking outside of ourselves for like,
in these different schools of thought. So it's like using those as a tool and then always coming back to your own body and being like, what lands for me? What is true for me? What does my intuition have to tell me as well?
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, I've done that. I've gone down the path of becoming like somewhat obsessed with different tools or things that were outside of myself to try and find answers. And that's always alarming when you are constantly seeking outside of yourself versus just allowing yourself to be informed by maybe astrology as an example, and then still using your own free will to make decisions that are right for you. And then it's really about just looking at patterns and seeing like what did happen, what did I learn from that? Was that predicted based on the energy patterns that I was able to see or someone, an astrologer, told me? And how can I learn from that and grow and apply myself the next time? Not becoming 100% reliant on it, but using it as an opportunity to just assist.
Yeah, amazing. So how did you get into astrology and learn about it and kind of bring it into your life?
Yeah, so astrology has been a part of my life since I was a very little girl, literally just the horoscopes in the back of the newspaper that my dad read. And so I became super fascinated with astrology just from, how old would I have been? Like maybe 7 or 8 years old. And it was my favorite thing to read our family's horoscopes out based on whatever was written in the back of the newspaper. And I don't know how much of that was relevant or accurate or anything, but I think I just loved the mysticism of astrology from a young age, which has been reflected in my life throughout many different areas. I've been deeply enthralled, like I said, in world religions and spirituality and occult studies. So it's no surprise that I kind of loved the idea of astrology and this predictive energetics that that were out there, but definitely on more of like a novelty side when I was younger. So I started to study it in my early teens just as like a hobby. I thought it was fun to learn about all of the different energies. And at this point in time, I'd never dipped into my natal chart or anything like that. I didn't even know what a natal chart was. I really only knew my sun sign, which is what I believe most people know and are familiar with. It's what we always call just like, what are you or what is your sign? People are referencing the placement of the sun at their time of birth. And so I only knew that up until probably I was maybe 17 or 18 when I finally accessed my natal chart for the first time. But prior to that, in that teenage window, I had just spent time studying the energies of each of the zodiac placements. So that's what we know as like Capricorn, Sagittarius, Taurus, all of those placements. So just really understanding the energetics behind those, but not really as they relate to planetary placements. And then I found my natal chart, which essentially is a snapshot in time of where all of the planets are within the zodiac in relationship to where you're born specifically on the earth. I always like to think of the visual as like if you were to drop a pin on your birthplace at the time of your birth, because of course the earth is spinning as well as rotating. And then you were to kind of like grab strings from that pinpoint and pull them to all of the other planets. That's kind of the like web of your natal chart. And so it's what those energies represent within the planets that are placed there, and then how they interplay with each other. So it's the chemistry that's really important within the natal chart, as opposed to each of the individual placements being, they're not mutually exclusive, which is what I think one of the biggest misinterpretations of natal charts or astrology is. People understand, oh, I've got, you know, my sun in Capricorn and my moon in Pisces, using myself as an example. And they can go ahead and read online, and online it's going to give you just a description of what that individual placement is. It what it doesn't do is it doesn't go into detail around how they play together. So what would the chemistry be of that combination of a sun in Capricorn and a moon in Pisces? So that's really like the art of reading natal charts, or being an astrological interpreter or just an astrologer in general, is your capacity to understand the combinations of the energetics and interpret.
Yeah. Every time because I love to read about astrology and my own signs and my chart, but there's always so much information that it's like, when you, exactly what you said, when you read online, it's like, you know, these are the qualities of, for example, my sun sign is Virgo, and a lot of the qualities I'm like, nope, that ain't me. And then I look at, but then I look at my moon and my rising, and yeah, it's so interesting to learn how they all work together. And I guess my question is, like, how does creating more awareness of our signs and the interplay within those, how does that help us in life kind of navigate our decision-making and our dharma, our direction, our purpose in life?
Yeah. So I think that's such a great question, because it actually brings me to specifically what karmic astrology is, because I've only been studying and practicing what's known as karmic astrology for about a year now. It's fairly new in my life. So, and it's since landing on karmic astrology that I've actually been able to provide more insight to my clients, to the people I read for, in regards to their direction or their purpose or where their biggest opportunities for growth or fulfillment would be. But prior to finding karmic astrology, I really just kind of went down that same path that I was just describing, where I became enthralled in the study of, I mean, first it started with just the zodiac signs, and then understanding what each planet does within each zodiac sign, and then the chemistry of how that works together. When finding karmic astrology, so what karmic astrology is it's essentially an arm of Western astrology. It would still be considered Western astrology. And what Western astrology is, or what we understand it is what most of us are already familiar with. So we use the tropical zodiac, which is the zodiac that we're, like I just said, we're all familiar with. It starts with Aries and completes with Pisces, as well as the houses, the Placidius houses, and it's interpreted essentially as a moment in time. The karmic piece comes in actually through the inclusion of some Vedic astrology. And Vedic astrology is ancient Indian astrology. And what Vedic astrology aims to do is it's actually mapping the movement. It's more interested in the actual transit, so the physical movements of the planets, and it's a little bit more predictive, you could say, in that sense, as we can see where the planets are going and where the potential like crossings are going to happen that could influence events in life. So bringing in this level of kind of, I guess we could call it prediction into it, what it actually allows me to do is, when I'm looking at someone's natal chart, yes, I am looking at the natal chart as a moment in time, but I'm saying, okay, so if your soul, we'll say, that's the word that I like to use, if your soul was implanted in this human body at this moment in time, at this intersection of all of these planets through these energy fields, ultimately, there's a why behind it. It's like, it's our own personal Rubik's Cube or riddle we're essentially here to figure out. So as opposed to reading for people how I used to in the past, which essentially is just validating them, right? So I read through the natal chart and I go, oh, you know, your moon is here, so this is probably how you express emotions, and your Mercury is here, so this is how you communicate. Instead, I'm looking at the natal chart to try and find what I like to call as our identity strongholds. So it's aspects within the natal chart that are like gripping us really tightly, the parts of us that make us feel like this is me. Because essentially, what I believe is that we're here to actually let go of that. That our identity is more a river that's meant to be crossed as opposed to something that we're supposed to hold onto super tightly. So it's through the uncovering of these aspects of ourselves that feel so natural and inherently us that we can see, wow, where do I hold myself back from, you know, surrendering into a moment or into connecting with others? Because so long as we feel that our identity is what makes us separate from other people, we have work to do. We have work to do in terms of, I guess you could call it, we've got karmic lessons essentially that allow us to break down those walls and barriers. So by interpreting someone's natal chart, I can both see where like the tightest grip is going to be around their identity, which ultimately offers them the biggest lessons and their biggest opportunities for growth. And there's two great things about that. The great thing is that the more we understand it, the more we can use our energy as a tool to our own, I guess, to our, what would I call it? To like our, to help us, to kind of assist us in life. So let's just say, for example, you are someone, you just said you have a sun in Virgo. So your sun being in Virgo, understanding what the sun represents in your natal chart specifically. So people, this is actually like a good diversion because I think the sun is the most misunderstood placement in the chart just because it gets the most attention.
Mm-hmm. I do not feel like a Virgo.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously there's so much energy in your chart. Yeah. So it's really understanding like what is the role of the sun in the chart. So people misinterpret the sun most often as being the predictor of personality, which it is not. It can definitely influence personality, and there's other aspects of the chart that it can really magnify itself within. But on its own, it's not indicative of our personality. There's actually two other placements in the natal chart, our ascendant and our Mercury, that the combination of those two tend to be more representative of what we perceive our personality to be. But so this is the first thing. The sun often gets misinterpreted as such. So what the sun is actually providing within the natal chart is, if we think about what the sun does just in general on Earth, is it illuminates, it lights up, so we're able to see what's in front of us. So we can essentially like see what we're doing, see the path that we're walking down. So within a natal chart, what the sun does is it essentially illuminates the path that you are meant to walk down in life to learn your lessons. So it's the way in which your life will likely unfold, and the ways in which you'll learn your lessons. So for you being a Virgo sun, the way in which that would unfold for you most likely is through the path of accomplishment and a little bit more ladder climbing, so to speak. So Virgo is an earth sign, but it's a mutable earth sign. So a little bit different than the other two earth signs, Capricorn and Taurus. Capricorn, which is much more dominant, and Taurus, which is much more stubborn. So Virgo, pardon me?
Taurus is my moon sign.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. So you've got double earth there, but they do function quite differently. Mm-hmm. So the Virgo sun, what Virgo is really known for within the zodiac is being an achiever, but it's an achiever through its capacity to see and plan and assess and use logic. So being the mutable sign, it really does have this capacity. All mutable signs have this, no matter what element they belong to, but all earth signs in general have this capacity to make tangible their reality. They're like the builders, the creators. And Virgo has this unique capacity to kind of oscillate between stepping into more dominance, so kind of like taking the bull by the horns and leading if it needs to, and also sitting back and being like, okay, I can just be the person who's like doing the tasks and getting the work done versus the leader. And it has the capacity to do this through its unique ability to really have foresight and deep knowledge surrounding like pattern finding. So they're also known on the zodiac as being the teacher's pet, because they do really like to do things and do them well. And be correct. And I think it's kind of funny because the Virgo time frame, we're actually coming up to it right away here, but it's within that like September window, which is like the back to school window, which I think is just ironic altogether. But they do have this energy where they are able to kind of really see for everyone what the best course of action is going to be, and knows how to where they can step in to provide the most support constantly. So when I think about how that would show up in someone's sun placement, that means that the lessons that you are here to learn in life, or the way that your life is meant to unfold, is through a trajectory that is a little bit more, I guess what we would perceive as stereotypical, in the sense that there's going to be a more of a level of normalcy as it pertains to accomplishment and moving yourself through kind of like the milestones in life. And so, yeah, what's good to know about that is that when we understand that, then we can kind of say, okay, I'm not going to fight that. I'm just going to let that be what it is. And I think that that is also a really powerful piece, versus like for someone, for example, who has a sun in, let's call it like Scorpio, which is a fixed water sign, their life is likely going to unfold in a very, their lessons are going to be learned through more obvious traumatic experiences, opportunities for them to really overcome and kind of have to pull themselves out of the depths, because Scorpio is a sign that is all about death and transformation, and it's a water sign. It's deeply emotional. So for them, they're going to learn their biggest lessons by likely having ignored their intuition, or having tried to make things more rigid than they should be, and then they kind of fall apart. And so the more they can kind of surrender into the way that their life will unfold, it will also become less painful. Meaning to say that for someone with a sun in Virgo, it's kind of like the acceptance that life and its accomplishments, or your lessons, are going to be marked by kind of this like gradual climb.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, not letting it be indicative of your personality per se.
Right. So in karmic astrology, are you still looking at, you know, where the sun is, where the moon is, where your rising is, and then it's just a little bit more kind of the energetic patterns within that to predict kind of your life path?
Yeah, absolutely. So I still look at the natal chart through the lens of the tropical zodiac. So I pull up what is just like a typical natal chart, and then I start to interpret from there. There's key points within the natal chart that really tip me off, I guess you could say, as to where someone's karma likely lies in their life, like where they're going to learn their most lessons. And that's when I see challenging aspects, or kind of like outliers within their energy. So whenever there's an outlier, meaning to say, like, say they have a natal chart that's full of, or primarily full of, like earth and air and earth, like I said, are signs that tend to be very tangible and practical, and they are creators and builders. And air signs are very intellectual, and they are thinkers, and they are pattern finders and visionaries oftentimes. So say they have a chart that's marked with a lot of earth and air placements, and then say they have like a Mars in a water sign, any of the water signs, I guess you could say. What that indicates to me automatically is an outlier within their energy, meaning to say this is going to be a pain point in their life. It's going to be something that's going to kind of be this aspect of them that provides challenge for them. It's almost like, oh my God, it doesn't matter how, you know, practical I am, or how much I can get ahead of what I'm doing by thinking and seeing patterns, I still have this reactive quality. So Mars is the planet of drive, assertion, aggression, and often how we, it's indicative of how we express sometimes negative emotions. And so if say they had like a Mars in one of the water placements, and all water placements have a level, a more heightened level of emotional display usually than other signs, it could be this aspect of them that feels almost like an Achilles heel in their life. And they're like, oh my gosh, it's unpredictable for people. I don't know how to control it. It's like I can get swung up into this like heightened emotional state, and it's something I can't seem to get under control. So when we like can either look at outliers within the chart like that as an example, or oftentimes what I notice a lot in natal charts is people will have like a heavy split. So they'll have like quite a few planets and placements within signs that are that we'll say like they play nice with each other, and then they'll have like another half of their chart with placements that also maybe play nice with each other, but then those two clumps kind of compete with each other. And so when that happens for people, for those people that I read for, they often describe having a experience in life or life experiences being very split for them. A lot of times this is like introvert extroverts who identify as two very different ends of the spectrum in different parts of their life. And so it's really kind of tackling that and understanding, okay, so then what lessons are we here to learn through that? Why? Because nothing happens by accident. So if we believe that it was intended that this energy was given to you to figure out, what could the lesson be? Where do we need to find softness and surrender within ourselves to be able to accept both sides of ourselves and not necessarily favor one and punish the other?
Yes, I can resonate with that for sure. What about the energetics of where we're at right now in 2020, which has been just like the wildest year for most people? What about the energetics that are happening now? And like, are you able to tell us a little bit about the energetics that are going to be happening in the future in the next few months?
Yes, I can definitely give you a little bit of an insight. This year has been so interesting to see how it has unfolded, because this time last year, I was looking ahead at some of the transits that were upcoming for 2020 because I was planning some big life changes for myself, and I wanted to kind of have a little bit of insight as to what I could maybe anticipate. And although I did not anticipate the specific events, it's by no surprise that certain events have unfolded the way that they have, given the energy that's been at play. So one of the biggest things that I can say about 2020 is that it is the first year in a long time that we have seen every single planet go through retrograde in the same year.
What does retrograde mean?
Yeah, so retrograde is actually an optical illusion that happens. So when a planet, so when planets are orbiting the sun, and the way that we understand Western astrology is we actually kind of do something funny where we pretend that the Earth is the center instead of the sun being the center, which I know is super crazy and is not at all the case. Things do not revolve around the Earth. But for the sake of the fact that we all live on this planet, it makes sense as to why we use that as kind of the center point. But essentially what happens is as these other planets are orbiting essentially around us and around the sun, there's this optical illusion that happens when they are passing Earth. So as they pass Earth through the, like around the sun, there's this moment in time where it feels like they're actually going backwards instead of forwards. Now they technically are still going forward. It's just this illusion that's created. So what a retrograde period offers us, I think most people think that it makes everything break down and fall apart, which is not true. But what I like to think of a retrograde as is like a pocket of intensified growth through friction and discomfort. So it's like this weird friction time frame, because we believe things are going backward, but they're actually going forward. And so what that creates is it just really kind of like bubbles stuff to the surface, and forces us to, kind of deal with, discomfort because yes, things can sometimes go wrong, so to speak, or what we believe is wrong. And then ultimately it's as those things, go wrong that cracks and flaws, whether it's in our logic or our plans, are illuminated, and then we're forced to deal with them. So I like to think that they're really good opportunities for growth if we want to embrace them that way. If we're resistant to the energy, it creates discomfort and things to be hard for us. And I really am more of a glass half full person. And so I really do like to look at energy as giving us opportunities to grow. And we know that, I believe that we would probably all know that the biggest growth happens through times of discomfort. And so that's really what retrograde periods offer us. But kind of coming back to 2020, we don't usually see as many as we have this year, all happening in one year. And not only are they happening, but they're happening in difficult placements. So it's like where these planets are currently sitting within the zodiac and then going into retrograde is what's creating a lot of this energetic friction that I believe is just a very supportive framework for kind of all this shit to be happening around us. It's really like boiling everything to the surface, so to speak. So one of the biggest ones that I can speak to that's happened in the recent past that I think is highly applicable is the Saturn shift. So Saturn is a really cool planet within the chart. It's usually like kind of a no fun planet because it's all about work and like the work that we're here to do. But Saturn was previously hanging out in Capricorn for about 2.5 years. And it hangs out in each of its placements for about 2.5 years. So we only ever see Saturn do a full run through the zodiac roughly every 28 years. So gives you like an understanding of how long it hangs out in each zodiac placement. And so when Saturn was in Capricorn for, we'll call it the last 2.5 years, Capricorn is cardinal earth energy. It's all about work and accomplishment and building. And it's like a fast sign. It like wants to move fast. It's very ambitious. And we saw it shift out of Capricorn and into Aquarius, which is the next placement on the zodiac, briefly for a few months starting at the end of March. Now, what is the most significant thing that happened at the end of March amidst this shift was the COVID-19 being declared a global pandemic. So why this is really interesting is because
Sorry, hold on. Okay. No barking. No barking.
He's recently found his voice and he's like asserting himself. Anyways, go on. Oh,
that is okay. No worries. So Saturn, which was in Capricorn, then shifted briefly, and I'll explain the briefly portion, but shifted briefly into Aquarius at the end of March, like within days of COVID-19 being declared a global pandemic. Now, what's interesting and kind of freaky about that is Aquarius is all about revolution. It's all about it's a humanitarian. It's about like what's best for the collective versus the individual. And it's all about kind of change. Like there, I always like to think of Aquarius energy as like kind of crusader energy. It's like what needs to be done to kind of shake things up and start again. And that's because it's also the second last sign within the zodiac. So we always like to think of like the progression of the signs in the zodiac being like that on purpose, but it's the second last sign, meaning that it's like doing this final kind of shakeup before we enter the last phase of the zodiac, which is Pisces, where we move into a more idealism as opposed to kind of like the revolutionary approach that Aquarius likes to take. So within Saturn shifting into Aquarius, we saw the world declare a global pandemic. We also saw major events happen around Black Lives Matter, around quite a few like global events that have taken place that really put on the forefront humanity as a whole, as opposed to individualized pursuits, or what is important to the individual was going on the back burner versus what is important for the collective. So that was like a really cool shift to see how that actually manifested, how that energy manifested. Now, I say it was only in Aquarius briefly because Saturn does this thing when it travels around the zodiac, where it kind of like hangs out in a sign for about 2.5 years, and then it kind of does a teaser. It like jumps into the next placement for a minute, and then it comes back into the placement it was previously in for like a final goodbye, and then it'll officially shift into Aquarius. So we actually are back in Saturn Capricorn right now, and that happened at the beginning of July. So we saw Saturn shift back into Capricorn while it's in retrograde. We're getting that retrograde action because it's getting ready to shift into its next placement. And we'll see Saturn stay in Capricorn until the beginning of December, at which point in time it will then shift into Aquarius for the next two years and a bit. So one of the biggest things to note right now is that since we are currently in a retrograde period for Saturn and we're seeing Saturn back in Capricorn, what this is doing is it's kind of giving us this, I'd want to say like this false sense of things going back to normal, to the way things were operating before. So like we're seeing things open back up. We're seeing kind of businesses or people getting back to normal. But the important thing to keep in mind is that this is Saturn in retrograde in Capricorn, meaning to say that it's kind of a false representation of that. And as it shifts out of retrograde, which will happen at the end of September, and then we have it still for those two months before it then shifts into Aquarius, we're going to kind of feel that breakdown and that discomfort once again that kind of happened, I would say, at the beginning of this year through February and March before we finally called it a pandemic. So that's something I'm definitely anticipating coming up through the end of the year, is the influence of Saturn in retrograde and its final transition from Capricorn to Aquarius and the events that will unfold there. Another really influential piece of that is where we have Mars right now, because Mars is a planet that is all about, as I mentioned earlier, drive, assertion, getting things done, aggression. And we have Mars, which is also, or which is coming up to a retrograde in the sign of Aries. And so Aries is the first sign in the zodiac. It's all about, like, it's a little bit of an instigator. It's got a lot of great qualities. It's a leader sign. It's a leadership sign. It's cardinal fire air or cardinal fire energy. So it's very explosive. It's got a lot of like gusto behind it. It wants to get things done. So at this point in time, we have Mars in Aries and we have Saturn in Capricorn. And those are two very dominant forward moving signs, and they are forming what is called a square to each other. And what a square means is that they are essentially, how would I go around the, they're about 90 degrees away from each other on around the zodiac. And what square aspects do is it's very competing energy. So it creates a little bit, it adds to the friction. And so we've got Mars in Aries right through to the end of the year before it shifts in early January. And within it being in Aries, we're actually also going to see it go retrograde from September 9th until November 13th. And so there's this pocket that I would advise people to just be aware of, where we're actually going to have both Saturn and Mars in retrograde at the same time in this square aspect, this Aries Capricorn square aspect, which is September 9th to 28th. So about like the last 3 weeks of September, I would say anticipate some cataclysmic events. I think that it's impossible to have that energy combination and not see it get a little bit explosive. And so as it pertains to Saturn, which is all about work and pushing things forward, and Mars, which is about drive and assertion, that combination is a bit concerning, I would say. It's probably like the most concerning window of 2020 that I was able to see and predict. So that's coming up in September. And I don't want anyone to think about that in a negative way. I think that one thing that we can do is we can support ourselves by making our lives easier for ourselves. Maybe not planning anything too crazy within that window. And instead saying like, how can I approach the month of September with ease and grace so that whatever events are meant to unfold can unfold, which I think is what the ultimate point of 2020 is as a whole, is like, how much can we surrender to what's happening around us?
Yep, I'm feeling that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like one of the biggest ones. There's two other little windows that I think people could use, I'll call it as opportunities for growth again. The next one is mid-October to early November, and that is where we will see the final Mercury retrograde for 2020. So we've already had two earlier in the year, and we will see Mercury go retrograde one more time. Mercury goes retrograde about three times a year, and it's just because it's the closest planet to the sun and it moves the fastest. So that's why it happens more often. But it only stays in retrograde usually for about 3 weeks. So that's what we will see happen from October 13th to November 3rd. Mercury will go into retrograde first in Scorpio, and then it will be in Libra in retrograde. And so it's just an important time to think. I mean, this is really – that time frame is kind of overlapping the U.S. election. So I have some – thoughts on how that could potentially unfold, understanding Mercury is the planet that rules communication and thoughtfulness and the way we process information. So this is where we always say like Mercury retrogrades can be where we have like breakdowns in communication. And Scorpio is the planet, as I mentioned earlier, of death and transformation. So it can be a very destructive placement for the purpose of making things better, but it does, it can be very destructive. And then it shifts into Libra, retrograde Libra, and Libra is all about peacekeeping. But since it's in retrograde, sometimes the negative side of peacekeeping can be withholding information and not being authentic and completely honest. So just seeing this Mercury retrograde Scorpio Libra within that time frame and understanding some major cultural events that are planned to take place during that time period has me thinking about maybe what could happen. And then on an individual level, people could anticipate this time frame by just being a little bit more thoughtful with what they say and how they say it, understanding that if they are being secretive for the sake of self-preservation, it will likely not go well for them. So it might be a great window of time to practice if we don't have the capacity to be honest with certain people in our lives or around certain situations, maybe instead what we need to do is create distance and not get ourselves into a situation where we are having to lie or white lie or manipulate to protect ourselves.
Interesting. So
that's another one. And then the last major pocket that I see is happening at the end of November to mid-December. And this pocket aligns with our last eclipses of the year. So we've got a penumbral eclipse on November 30th, which will be a full moon, and then a total eclipse on December 14th, which will be a new moon. And both of these are within the Gemini-Sagittarius axis. Meaning to say that the penumbral eclipse on November 30th will be in Gemini. That's where we'll have a full moon. And then the total eclipse on December 14th will be in Sagittarius. These two signs sit opposite each other on the zodiac. So whenever we have an eclipse, we always want to think about the axis that that represents. And so both of these, one happens in Gemini, one happens in Sag. And those sit opposite each other. And Gemini is all about information. And Sagittarius is all about freedom. So the first one is November 30th, full moon in Gemini. So information coming to light that is uncomfortable, that's something that we can anticipate. But of course, always for the sake of it's better to know the truth or understand the reality of what we're working with. And then the new moon on December 14th, I think is going to hallmark an opportunity for people to set up their final 2 weeks of this year and call in what they need to bring more freedom into their lives. Because I think that one of the biggest things that's happened throughout this is it has challenged our perception of what freedom is. And since the paradigm of our reality is shifting, it's taking that 2 week period where we can be more in this, like in the driver's seat of our own life, saying, okay, I'm accepting, what 2020 has brought to light. That's going to be that like full moon in Gemini, the information like, wow, I actually finally have a time to look back. We're now like November 30th is the last day of the 11th month. And then we go into the final month of 2020. It is kind of this massive illumination where we're going to be able to really see how 2020 unfolded and how we were amidst that. Did we handle it with grace? Did we shift and adjust as well as we could have? And it's okay if we didn't, but in that 2 week period before the new moon sets in on December 14th, it's really releasing and letting go of what we thought whatever 2020 was supposed to be. And we let go of that. And instead we kind of almost like baptize ourselves again and call in something new, a different type of freedom, a more independent part of our lives that's not necessarily reliant on the things that we were reliant on before. And that seeing that, yeah, that new moon in Sagittarius, which is about freedom and change and optimism. Sagittarius is a deeply optimistic sign. So it's like it's going to end on a really positive note. I really do see that happening because a lot of those retrogrades end before the end of this year. A lot of these retrogrades are ending through the fall months. The Mercury retrograde will be done. Mars will be out of retrograde. Jupiter out of retrograde. Saturn out of retrograde. Neptune out of retrograde. Pluto out of retrograde. Oh, we're going to see a lot of shift back into direct energy, which is so amazing. And then we end the year, like I said, on that total eclipse, which is the only total eclipse of 2020, in the sign of Sagittarius, at the same time that the sun is in Sagittarius, which is, yeah, freedom, optimism, excitement. And it's going to be cool. It's going to be a tough few months, I feel. And yeah, that last window, like I said, that November 30th to December 14th, I think is going to herald a new time for all of us.
In terms of, you know, you said now is kind of the time that we're sort of feeling like things are going back to normal, and then we're going to kind of have like another awakening of, okay, no, not quite yet. I was reading a post of yours about now being the time to take action. Something about, I forget what it's called, but it's something to do with being in Leo.
Oh yeah, the Lion's Gate.
The Lion's Gate. So yeah. Right now, is it kind of like we do feel like in some ways we're going back to normal, take the action now when the fire is there, when the momentum is there, and then kind of wait and see?
Yeah, so the way that I would interpret the Lion's Gate and its effect this year specifically, because granted, we don't usually have like the energetic craziness that we do. I mean, there's always energies moving around, but this year is just particularly wild. So the Lion's Gate is actually hallmarked by this star Sirius, which is way brighter than our sun, that comes closer to Earth than usual. And so it happens usually around August 8th, so the 8th day of the 8th month. And what that does is it really illuminates our capacity to step into the light and be seen. So I think that what that's doing this year for us, the way I interpreted it, because August is actually, believe it or not, like a little bit of a reprieve. It might not feel like it entirely, but it is, there wasn't anything too crazy happening this month. It's more of like more of the same energy, but there was no major transits, eclipses, anything that was too significant that was kind of messing or could have insinuated some major events happening. I mean, we did see some stuff happen. Like we saw the explosion happen in Beirut, that happened last week. And I mean, there's also a lot of stuff that we're not hearing about happening around the world. I think, yeah, a volcano erupted in Indonesia. There's been quite a bit of events. But what it's asking you to do, Leo is the sign that's all about pride and can at times be a little bit ego-driven, but what it does is it's like an embodiment sign. It's like, who are we? What is the character that we're playing in this life? And so with the Lion's Gate opening up, that Sirius star coming closer to Earth, it's kind of like shining a light on us anyway. So if we're going to have the light shone on us, we might as well step into it and own it, and be really intentional about how we are portraying ourselves and the characters that we are playing here? Who do we want to be? And so I think that it was kind of like a tee up, because at this point I think the way most people are feeling is like nothing's really surprising us anymore in 2020. It's like, what's next kind of thing. But amidst that, what's next, becoming like despondent or, becoming despondent or like lax about events happening isn't great. If we've lost the gusto inside ourselves to feel, just to feel, right? Like to feel in general, and we come kind of like numb to events, then that's what we're creating. We're creating numb energy and we're putting it out there versus saying, okay, yes, 2020 has the capacity to continue to surprise me through the rest of the year. And who do I want to be? How do I want to show up? Like, what do I want to embody throughout this? Because it's not over yet, you know? Like, we can look ahead all we want to December, but it's only August. We've got, a few like crucial months where, like I said, even if these energies weren't happening, which they are, they're lining up to some major, major cultural events like the US election, which is happening this year. And there's likely going to be more pandemonium, more unrest, more uprisings to come. And the first ones might have taken us off guard, and we can't say that anymore. So it's kind of that, like, in that magnifying glass is here to say, how do I want to show up? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be in choice now. I'm going to be proactive about it.
Mm-hmm. So in that Leo energy of deciding on what we want to embody and how we want to show up and the way we want to move through the world and, kind of owning the way we want to be seen, how does that lend itself into Virgo season that's coming up? Like you mentioned that there's a couple weeks in September that might be a little bit surprising. Mm-hmm. So how does this energy of that embodiment move into the next season here?
Into the next season, yeah. So the time frame that I was kind of talking about was September 9th to 28th. So that's kind of like the Virgo overlapping into Libra sun season. That's what I'm always referencing. It's where the sun is currently. So Virgo tends to be a lot more methodical than some other planetary placements. It's very thoughtful and planned and organized. And so I think that we actually have between now, like we have about a month before, because what is it today? August 13th when we're recording this?
Yeah.
So we have a good chunk of time between when that Lion's Gate opened, which was on August 8th, to September 9th, when we're going to feel that Mars go into retrograde while Saturn's still in retrograde. And it's kind of like using that first bit of Virgo energy as we come up here into it next week to plan, to be planned about how we're going to show up, saying, okay, so I know what I want to embody. I know how I want to show up, how I would like to be seen and who I would like to be seen as, and not in a vain way, in a way that's more true, because we've seen maybe it's not how we showed up over the last 6 months. And then we have this nice little chunk of time to actually put that into action, to kind of build the infrastructure, which is what Virgo is so good at doing. It's really good at like organizing, planning, setting things up, and use the influence of that energy, because I think that it's very normal around this time of year to really get into that mode. A lot of us are used to it being back to school. And it's funny because that back to school energy doesn't go away when you finish school.
No,
it's like, it's so ingrained in us, right? Because a lot of us experience that from the time we're 4 or 5 years old, straight through college and university. And then oftentimes people then have children or however not far long after that, and then their children are in school. So everyone's really influenced deeply by this Virgo energy shift anyway. That's kind of like a, okay, I've got like 4 months left in the year, and like I've got this, this, and this that needs to get done. Also, the seasonality is changing, right? Like the seasons are changing, at least over here in North America. Our seasons shift down, and we have energy that can be used in a more, in like less of a flighty way. So we can really grab hold of that Virgo energy to be the like implementer. So we craft the vision now. We know what that vision is. How do we want to be seen? What do we want to embody? And then we have to actually come up with a plan of action for it. Because if we're not already operating that way, well, we can't just expect ourselves to step into operating that way if we don't know what changes we need to make in our life to make that a reality. Like, do we need to create more space in our schedule? Do we need to become more habitual? Do we need to layer in some different practices? Do we need to weed stuff out of our life? Like, what do we need to do? And so that's that Virgo energy towards the end of this month. And that is really, like, I think that we have such a amazing window right now to set ourselves up for the rest of the year. Yeah, because
this
I do
exactly feel, how I'm feeling right now. Like,
yeah,
like where I'm noticing the offerings that I'm wanting to put out that feel really good and authentic to me and that feel really joyful and honest. And yeah, and then knowing kind of what those next steps are and putting those plans into motion, that's the support that I'm feeling. I notice that I'm going to need moving into the next few months of still that inevitable change and the inevitable events that are going to happen and continue to happen for the rest of the year.
Yeah. And like, we're not going to see it slow down. So Mars shifted into Aries at the beginning of July, and Saturn shifted back into Capricorn at the end of June, which is why we're, I feel like everyone's been saying it was like, you know, like a switch flipped. And all of a sudden what felt like we were like walking through like water slowly turned into like we were on like a treadmill and like things were moving really fast starting like right at the turn of the season. And I think people might have just assumed, oh yeah, you know, it's the season changing, it's summer, but realistically, like, not that much changed. We had seen, you know, the reopening of certain establishments happen back in May. So it's kind of this energy that shifted right at the end of June, beginning of July, that kind of put things into warp speed. And that speed is going to maintain itself right through to the end of the year. So that is, well, at least right through to early December, because it's in early December that we do see Saturn shift officially back. Not back. Well, I guess it's technically back because it was already there, but into Aquarius, where it will stay for 2 years. And so that is a key point to at least look ahead and say the momentum, like it felt like what, April, May, and June could have been like an entire year. Like those 3 months just felt like they just went on and on and on. But the next 3 months, September, October, November, it's going to feel like 1 month has passed. It's going to go so fast. And as we know, having foresight into how do we operate when things get out of control, when things start moving too fast, what immediately falls to the wayside? And so can we right now use this beautiful little pocket of time while we also have the energy supporting us, right? Like the sun in Leo is very energizing. And then the sun moving into Virgo is very like planned, and it kind of has this energy that's more like, okay, yeah, I want to accomplish things. I want to get them done. And we can really capitalize on that energy to help us set us up so that the infrastructure is really there to support us. So it's like, if we think that we need to move, we should be getting ahead of that right now. If we think that something's going to come up that's going to be a wrench through September, October, November, how can we get ahead of that right now and kind of like tend to it instead of just being like, oh, I'll just deal with it then.
Beautiful. Well, this has been so informative and amazing. And I feel like I've really, just been noticing these energies, this like looming energy of the Virgo season and kind of getting things set up. I feel like I'm very much in that mode. And I'm sure a lot of people are feeling the same. So I really appreciate this beautiful reading and energetic forecast. And I'd love to know how people can find you and support you in your work.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. This was super fun. I feel like being able to talk to someone in this more long format time frame has been so nice for me because I tend to have a lot of words. So I appreciate that. How people can find me. So on Instagram, I am guided by Nell, N-E-L. And I'm currently working on my website. It's been in the works for what feels like years, but I actually just shifted my branding. I had a different Instagram handle before, so I'm chalking it up to it was never meant to be. And I didn't invest in all of the work of getting that website up and running. And now I've shifted and it is at Guided by Nell. And if they just head to my Instagram, they will be able to click the link in my bio and they can book a reading. I also do development coaching and I run programs and have a retreat upcoming in September. So I look forward to all of that stuff.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, of course.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please feel free to share this link with a friend to help give them a little support during this time as well. And I hope you have a beautiful weekend. We will chat soon.